Welcome back to Copper Country Today. I'm your host, Rick Allen. Joining me in studio right now, Horst Schmidt from the Quincy Smelter Association. Horst, nice to talk to you once again.
Well, thanks for having me again.
Now, here we are, and this winter has set in. The Quincy Smelter is covered in a nice little blanket of snow, and you get tours during the summer that are, it's closed right now, and just humorously, I'm thinking, it's too cold to go and tour the smelter, but there were people working there all year long when that thing was open, but it was quite a different scene then. So tell me, let's just start with the Quincy Smelter Association before we get into the history of the smelter and what you guys are available. Who's this organization, and how do you, what's the purpose of it?
Well, originally Franklin Township owned the property and had their township hall there. And the two of the people that I'm aware of, Judy Counts and Mary Brunette, who were both the clerks in the office, in other words, the town clerk and the treasurer, I believe. And they saw a need to preserve it and started this in about 2007. And they started a movement. They got the industrial archaeology students at Tech involved, and start giving tours, because at that time a lot of the roofs were falling in, some of the walls were going, and so they were doing that. And the drumbeat got to Carl Levin, and the idea was to ask him to give some money so they could stabilize the whole site. And they said, he asked how much. They said $1 million. And he said, wow, that's a lot of money. And, it was all well spent, because the walls that could be stabilized were, for example, the casting plant, which is the furthest east building. All the galvanized siding had rusted away, so they put all new siding on the walls as well as the roofs. And the buildings that had walls that were collapsing, tried to stabilize them, or they put plywood over them. So it was really a major project, and we still didn't get all the work done that was necessary, but it's standing, and the secret in the UP is to have a roof.
Oh, it helps to have one. How long was the site dormant since it was last actually used?
Well, it was closed in 1971 by the EPA for air pollution, and it was never reopened. And so that's the date you're looking at this point. And so, the smelter itself was closed from 1932 to 1948, I believe. But the thing is, Quincy always maintained its properties. And so when they got the property, it had started deteriorating. But at the time that they sold it to apparently some tech grads who wanted to store their large toys, it was in very good condition.
So from the 40s to 1971, if it wasn't being used as a smelter, what was it?
Well, it was just
ground.
Dormant.
Oh, okay.
They didn't have any need for it, because they had stopped mining in 1945, and most of the work stuff that they were getting were from the stamp sands that they had dumped into Torch Lake and pulled out, and then dumped back in after they had reground them into an even finer powder-like substance, which is, of course, what another subject.
Yeah, I'm always fascinated by the old pictures of any of the mining industry and the smelter as well, too, because you can still see it. It's sort of like the mine hoist. You look up there and it's in the exact same spot it was, when it was in full operation. And same thing with the smelter, when you look across the waterfront here from the Houghton side and see it and try to imagine a time when it was bustling, with workers and industry there, and boats coming in and out probably as well. It's fascinating to me, because I'm, being a bit of a history buff.
Well, what's interesting about the Quincy Smelter is it's really a time travel picture of what the technology did in terms of changing the smelter, because it was built in 1898, And at that time, almost everything was done by hand. They had a rail system. The guys pushed these carts by hand, and they had to shovel stuff, coal into the furnaces. They had to take the ashes out. They had to put copper ore into the furnaces. And again, you know, shovel coal into those furnaces. So it was all manual labor. And even with the coal ships that came in, they had to unload them manually. They have a man down in the hold, and they would put a bucket down there, and then he would fill it up, and then they hoist it up, and they had these wooden coal docks at that time. And then they would put them in the little carts and then dump it, so you have coal all over the front of the lot there. And the company had to get those ships emptied in 72 hours if they didn't want to pay extra for holding the ship. So it was a 24-hour operation. So this is the kind of thing that happens. But then they have the big expansion in 1921, because at that time Quincy had quadruple production from its original shaft. And so they needed to become more reliant upon mechanical tools, such as purchasing an electric battery locomotive, and moving from a hand casting to a mechanical casting with something called a Walker casting machine, which is really a fascinating thing to see when you come to the smelter. So what happened is, prior to the mechanization in 21, they had up to 140 at times. After that, they never needed more than 60 to 80
workers.
Correct. So this is the thing. And what the smelter is all about is material handling. How do you get things from here to there and there to here and moving forward? Do you have a casting machine that allows you to put at least 100,000 pounds of copper into molds within, say, about a 12-hour period? Or do you have a smaller one where you hand ladle, which is only about 22,000 pounds of copper into molds, and the guy has to go and dip? And all the hand labor that's required, and then you have to haul these things into the warehouse. So it's a fascinating process.
So it's what took place at the smelter? If we don't have your background and understand the mining process, what took place at a smelter?
Well, at the smelter, what happens is that you get the ground up ore, which is what we call stamp sands, from the mill. In this case, it was in Mason, so all of the stuff was done from by rail. So the mine would send the ore to mill in Mason, and then the Mason would come to the Quincy smelter, and they would put it into their ore warehouse, and then when they needed it, then they would bring it to the what they call the reverberatory building. And the reason they call it a reverberatory building is because what you really needed was to keep the ore and the fuel separate. And so they had a half wall, and this allowed the heat to bounce up and down on the wall and the ore, and that's the reverberatory part. So it's kind of like a radio signal.
Okay. Huh. And when they were done with it, what did they do with the copper? Was that the last stop for it here?
It was then put into the molds originally by hand, and then with the Walker casting machine. Then guys would haul it over to the warehouse. And before there was rail, they had only could send it out in ships from about April through November. But after the railroads came in, then they were able to do year-round shipping, and so you had both the at the facility.
Interesting. What remained, I guess, pretty much intact when the Quincy Smelter Association steps in after 2007. some of the machinery that was original?
Well, you know, most of the stuff is too heavy, so, you know, vandals can't carry it off too readily unless they want to get a hernia. And so, you know, it's mostly the smaller stuff that either gets taken or they throw it around, you know, and that's the problem you have when the thing is open and nobody's really protecting it.
Hmm. So the machinery was still there. What about signs of just life, like in the offices themselves and places where the workers would be, just things that were left behind of interest to, you know, historical nerdy guys like you and me.
Well, the office is a replica of what you would have seen in the 1950s and 60s, you know, the calculating machines and all the paper type of products that were needed to process it before we had computers, and so you have a whole building devoted to payroll, to keeping statistics on incoming, outcoming, and whatever personnel problems there were, so you have that there now, and then in the one building called the Cupola Building, you actually have five different things. You have a blacksmith shop, you have the power generation, because at the time that the smelter was built, we didn't have electricity for everybody here, so they had to produce their own. And then we had the pump house, which pumped water from the canal, and went not only for the smelter, but they actually sent it up to the mine, and they would need up to 1 million gallons a month in order to take care of their needs. And then you had a cupola furnace, which basically took the slag that and tried to get the rest of the copper out of it. And so that part is gone because it was made out of steel, and with all the heat, it just rusted and leaked because it had a water jacket. So those are the kinds of things that are still there. And in the reverberatory, we actually have one of the original furnaces. Then we have the two large ones that were used by the company when they wanted to really get ramp up production. In the 1920s, they actually had huge chunks of pure copper that they found in the Quincy mine, and you know, these were tons of copper, so they had to break them into pieces. They shipped them directly to the smelter, and they had to, you know, lift them up with a crane and put them into the furnace. Mm-hmm. And that part, you know, that was a major change in terms of increasing production.
All right, so you had to get $1 million. You got $1 million to try to get this site up and running, so it can be but open for the tours, to get it to the basic part where you can actually start having people come in. But it's an ongoing process, I understand.
Yes. Well, you know, before the stabilization, they were giving tours in order to build support in the community. But when the highway project came through on M26, what, about 2 years ago?
Yeah.
Okay. That's when the advisory commission of the Keweenaw National Historical Park purchased it from Franklin Township, and they started to clean up the property because even though it was delisted by the EPA, you still had mercury, you still had asbestos, and various other issues that have to be cleaned up before the Park Service can actually officially receive the smelter as part of the park.
Is there plans to, I guess, continue to restore it so that it is similar to some of the other parts of the park, which are, you know, some of the park is almost appears like it's brand new. I mean, the way that they've restored it, the Quincy smelter is still, you know, very, I guess, rustic.
Yeah. Well, the answer is it depends upon whether they get funding from Congress to do this. And at this point, it's a holding project trying to clean up the old pollution that's still on the property and get it cleaned up. And that takes money. And fortunately, the Park Service is willing to, you know, help in this process so we can actually get it into the as a park property.
Okay. Now, it's great location, prime waterfront you know, property on the Ripley side there. Why preserve it at all?
Well, first of all, it's the only intact copper mine of the early 20th century in this country. And so as you know, people like yourself and younger people have absolutely no idea what it took to make copper in this country. And so it's a manufacturing process. And even though we give people a tour, they don't really get a feel of it because you don't get the heat, the smoke, and the heavy labor that it took to run these operations. So and this is what we're trying to convey as we give the tours, so that people know, you know, that this is what happened. And, you know, as you know, like me, everyone's getting older. And those people that used to work there, they're basically, you know, starting to fade away. And so whatever information we could get from them, we have at this point. But also we have the resource at the Michigan Tech Archives, which are very rich for the Quincy smelter and for the Quincy mine itself. And so I've done a bunch of research on the smelter, and it's really, really fascinating. You read letters by the smelter superintendent about, you know, the weekly goings on, and he's very, he apparently must have dictated them because they're very conversational, and you pick up all kinds of little pieces of information that you wouldn't be able to access anywhere else.
Now, not meaning to speak a blasphemy, but I'm sure that you're often asked to, you know, what about leveling the area and putting it back on the tax rolls by building houses or selling it to business that would be, you know, that would, you know, could benefit Ripley? You know, some people see, you know, it's ruins and want to see, well, why don't we just get rid of that and use and modernize and repurpose that land?
Well, then what's the point of you know, coming to Houghton or Hancock if you don't have something to see that's of value? I mean, you want people to have something to remember, and I think, you know, the smelter is one of the many things. And then, as you're probably aware, we have this heritage program through the advisory commission, which supports all of the different groups that are doing you know, the similar stuff to what we are, for example, in Central, and then the Adventure Mine out over in Ontonagon, and I think some of the museums, like the Keweenaw County Historical Society, has gotten funding from them. So it's helped really boost the legacy, but also it provides revenue, you know, from people coming, because you if you're going to come up here, it takes a long time to get up here from any major city. You know, I think we're about 7 hours away from any major city in the U.S. or Canada. So they have to stay overnight, they have to eat, and of course they have to spend money on gas, and hopefully they'll buy things in the gift shops. So all of this helps our local economy because of the tourism. With people coming in to bring their kids, and, you know, and the whole idea is that people who come here, both the young and the old, get an idea of why this area is so valuable from a historical point of view, but then think about the beauty of our total environment. I mean, you saw the fall color this year. Wasn't it great?
Yeah, sure.
And I mean, why wouldn't you want to come up here? I actually went out to the West Coast in the latter part of September, and I didn't see any full fall colors in terms of, you know, the reds and oranges and everything until I got here.
Mm-hmm. Now, yeah, it doesn't come from me. Now, I love the old structures and the historic nature of the area. In fact, when I was up here for my interview, I'm going back now over 7 years ago, and I had phoned my wife. I said, you know, it's like I'm... It's like it's Greenfield Village, and it's alive. Now, for those that don't know what Greenfield Village is, it's an area downstate, a park, basically, put together by next to the Henry Ford Museum, that they took a lot of the old buildings, historic buildings, and made a neighborhood out of it. And so you walk through, and it's very historic. Well, I felt that up here with the historic places in Calumet and Hancock and over on the Lake Linden side, I thought, man, it's like, you know, walking through living history here. And so I loved it. Now I know with, you know, something like the dredger over on Torch Lake that just got left there, that was just left junk, but now it's historic, so I don't want to see it go. Though it probably could be cleaned up. They feel the same way about the smelter. I mean, it was shut down now here, nearing a half century ago. Yes. And it's been a long time, even longer than that, before it was anything operational. But I would hate to see it gone. And when once those things are gone, they're gone forever. You don't get them back.
Well, you know, that's a good point. Because what happened is we saw a number of places in the smelter where, you know, the roofs were going and other parts were deteriorating. So the Smelter Association volunteered to pay for those repairs. And the reason we were able to do it is because a gentleman who used to come up here and loved the whole UP mining thing donated to a number of organizations, I think about 28,000 each. And we got one of those checks. And this is what we're doing with it, is to help maintain the property and say one of the sheds that are attached to the warehouse, for example, the galvanized sheeting has fallen off, or wind has blown it off. So we want to get that repaired so that there isn't more deterioration, and again, everything would start collapsing. So it's an ongoing battle, and even though the advisory commission, you know, which is directed by Scott C, has done a fantastic job in maintaining, we still have all of these little things. There's in the assay office, which is where they checked out the quality of the ore and the finished product. There's a leak in the chemistry lab, and it's been, we thought we had it fixed, and then this year I noticed it was coming again. It's actually got to put a hole into the floor that we stand on. So this is one of the things we want to get repaired, is this leak, so that this is one of the really well-preserved buildings, so we won't want it to get go any further. So these are the kinds of things that we are doing now to help the advisory commission in its job of bring this place up to snuff as much as possible.
I attended a ceremony a couple of summers ago where the smelter got its due recognition as a historic landmark, and that was very special to see.
That was the American Society of Metallurgists, or Metallurgy, and they presented the plaque, and we actually have it in the office at the Squincy Smelter. So if you want to see it, it's there. And, we start... Actually, there's two sets of tours. The Quincy Mine Hoist is doing tours 6 days a week from Memorial Day to Labor Day. And we still do tours once a month. The reason we only do them once a month is we don't get paid. so that it's harder to get people to do it for free. But we remain active in doing the tours and trying to help out where we can in terms of... keeping the place in good shape, because it's really, really a huge, huge project.
Hmm. Now, you guys don't get paid, but you guys need money, and there's ways that people can support this. One is simply go on the tours; you won't regret it. It's a great walk through, going through it. Like I said, I've been able to do that, and I don't regret that at all. That was a lot of fun, just being able to see inside and walk through those buildings. But apart from that, what kind of fundraising or what kind of support can people offer the Quincy Smelter Association?
Well, we're always willing to accept donations if people are willing. We have not done a fundraiser in quite a while, because the initial impetus is gone. But what I'm trying to do, and Scott C. is also trying to do, is to find ways to encourage people to use it as a community site. And being a former smelter, it presents a lot of challenges to trying to do things. But we would encourage groups to contact us and let us know if they're interested in having some kind of event, and we can see if we can accommodate them. And if it's appropriate, we would be more than happy to help them out.
What kind of events?
Well, one year we had the bicycle club from MTU use it as their endpoint, so that was successful. I've been trying to find out if the art center would be interested in doing something in our big reverberatory building, and if that so I've been working on, and maybe one of these days we'll get lucky and we'll have someone there, but. They have the old car things. We would be happy to consider, having them come there. And so whatever running groups, for example, would want to come, we would be more than happy to, again, to work with them on that, because most of the stuff is on the weekends, and, that's a good time for us as well.
All right. Well, sounds good. How do people get in touch with Quincy Smelter Association?
Well, they can contact me at Horsteher, Horsteher, at yahoo.com.
All right, that's the best way. Okay, great. Thank you so much for coming on the program.
Well, appreciate it again.
Copper Country Today, we'll be right back.